What's up, Myco family? Van from Mycotrophic here. Welcome back to my podcast, where together we are going to grow in mind, body, spirit, and mushroom. Today, we have a special guest. This is Drew Zimmerman of Uncle Fungus. How are you, brother?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent, dude. Woke up and actually got to sleep in today for the first time in a long time, and that was kind of weird, but also, you know, very good. Yeah, and then basically made coffee, and then I'm here podcasting with you today. So, yeah, dude, really excited to have you on today. I really don't know where to start, to be honest, other than our few conversations we've had via Instagram. I go to your page, and there's just so much going on, and it's so interesting. You know, things like beef tallow chaga soap, tinctures, yeah, wild forage mushrooms, microgreens, you know, like where do you start? So honestly, I kind of just want to hang out today, let everybody know who you are and where should we start? Like, what would you say it is that you predominantly focus on, and why is it that your content is so captivating?
I got a lot of stuff going on, like you said. You know, I like doing a bunch of different projects, you know, anything that fascinates me. I just tend to pursue it. Like you said, I got a bunch of stuff going on, so it's kind of hard to juggle everything. But I would say that, you know, what I do is like seasonal. So, like in the wintertime, I do a lot of, I just got into koji, started messing around with koji for the first time this winter. Yep. You know, I do a lot of fermentation and stuff like that. Kind of work on my product line. You know, do like odd stuff here and there, maybe do a market or something in the springtime. And I like to grow gourmet mushrooms outdoors and stuff like that. So that's also seasonal with the, you know, the weather patterns and stuff here in Pennsylvania.
I did see a post about the wine caps. I think that's really awesome. I would love to do the same. Unfortunately, here in Arizona, it gets to like 120 degrees. It basically kills everything except for the eggplants. They do just fine. What other kind of mushrooms can you grow outdoors? I know like the wine caps are pretty popular. And is that, I mean, what's that process look like?
For the wine caps or just for the in general?
Yeah, let's say in general and wine caps.
Yeah. So, you know, I started growing mushrooms indoors around 2020. It's been a hobby before that, but I turned it into my like almost profession sort of deal. I still paid the bills during like the pandemic and stuff. And that was cool. I did that. And then I started like, you know, I started having kids, got a bunch of kids now. I got like 3 kids. So, you know, the less work I have to do, the better. So I was just like, you know what? Pennsylvania just has the most absolute perfect, environment to grow mushrooms outdoors. I mean, it's got great foraging. You know, the weather patterns in the fall are tremendous. So, I just figured I'd start watching YouTube videos all about like, you know, Asia, how they grow mushrooms outdoors, like in hoop houses, small tents, things like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I got inspired by that and I just started messing around with it. I built like a really cheap structure out of PVC, you know, some shade cloth, some plastic sheeting, and like some clear plastic. And I just started playing around with it, started throwing lion's mane blocks, oyster blocks, things like that outdoors. And it turned out really well. It actually blew me away. In the springtime, you know, I'll do like lion's mane and oysters and stuff like that. There's like a short season in the spring for me, probably till like, you know, late April, early June, it gets pretty warm. And when it starts to warm up, I'll switch to like golden oysters, you know, the pink oysters, which are more tolerant to like warmer temperatures and stuff like that and drought.
Right.
So, yeah. And then you know, I'll take a break summer. You know, that's like wild foraging season here, like, you know, from like midsummer, you know, and then once around September-ish, I'll start doing like a larger run, an outdoor run of like I've done maitake outside, you know, lion's mane again, you know, all the good ones, all the hits, you know, they just love the natural weather.
Wow. That's amazing. How much of your food are you growing? Like what kind of a land do you live on? Is it like a farmish or just like, what does that look like for you? You're in Lancaster, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Southeast Pennsylvania. Cool. Yeah. I live on like, you know, I rent, I don't own property, but, you know, I rent out, probably like a 2.5, almost 3 acre plot. I have a nice sized garden. And you know, I grow just stuff seasonally. You know, I got like 3 kids. So of course any kind of food that I can grow is going to help the family and stuff like that. But what I really like to focus on is, like if I were to grow mushrooms outdoors or something like that, I used to take them to market and sell them. It was like a lot of work, but, I found that there's a higher return if you turn like lion's mane sun-grown lion's mane turn into like a tincture, or partner up with like a coffee company or something like that. You know, and just kind of do it that way, like value-added products. That's kind of what I've been focusing on. It's a lot easier than, you know, the continuous cycle of like growing mushrooms and going to markets and you know, connecting with chefs and restaurants, and it can be kind of a headache, honestly.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So the koji, I recently saw you doing that. What, my question, because I don't really know much about koji other than like the stuff that friends have given me. Can you like expand that culture, or is it like, how do you maintain that culture? Do you have to keep buying the powder that you use? And what is, I guess for those who don't know, what is koji?
So koji is a filamentous mold that's been domesticated for thousands of years in Asian culture. I think the Chinese were the first ones. I think the oldest recorded, you know, discovery, it was like a fermented alcoholic drink that had the mold in it. Aspergillus oryzei, I think that's how you pronounce it. But yeah, it's just a mold that has been domesticated for thousands of years. I mean, if you've ever had sushi and had soy sauce, if you ever had miso, if you ever had like a lot of these like really common things that you find here in the United States or in North America, you've definitely had koji. So the mold you can get from in like spores. That's typically how you grow it. It grows really fast. Like, you know, as soon as you inoculate your substrate or your medium, which is typically like rice or soybeans, like any kind of like protein sort of like bean or something like that. You can even do like vegetables, charcuterie. You can do it on like actual meat. You can, if you ever had sake too, sake is another one. You know, you can ferment alcohol, but it grows really fast. So like in 3 days, you're pretty much done. Like it's done growing. You want to harvest it. And it's usually like these really white, you know, like myceliated cakes of whatever substrate you have. And then you can turn it into like these other products like miso. You know, you get like soybeans and mix it with, you know, cook them off and then like mix the, like suppose you do it on rice, you know, grow the mold on rice, and you can mix that up and then ferment that for like months or do a short fermentation. There's just so much room for it, you know, experimentation. And it's like kind of like the forefront. Like the last forefront of like the culinary industry here in North America. We're just really kind of just, you know, scraping the surface with koji here in this country, which I think is really fascinating. I like kind of being on the forefront of like new things, you know what I mean? Trying new things. And, you know, there's a lot of room to make your own discoveries, things that haven't been done before, which I think is really cool. But yeah, you can grow it. You know, you can freeze it. You can keep it, you know, in your freezer. Vacuum sealed in your freezer, which I have a bunch in my freezer right now I need to kind of use up. But you can, it's really awesome. It's just fascinating because you can really pull out like the basic elements of food. So you can, what it does is the mold creates these enzymes that break down like proteins and turns them into like complex sugars, chains and things like that, which actually bring out that like what we call umami, which is like just like those like basic amino acids. So these like enzymes are breaking down the material, are turning the basically transforming the food into something like very special.
So why is it that America is just kind of getting into this, or you, I mean, what is your background in the culinary arts? Are you trained in any kind of culinary art or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, my first job, like, you know, in high school, out of high school, through my early 20s, was just in a restaurant, you know, in the restaurant industry, being like either a line cook or doing, you know, garmage, or, you know, all these different things. I kind of floated around. So I learned a lot, especially working at like more high end place back when I was like 22. I learned a lot there from the chef. And I've just always, I love cooking food. It's like, you know, it's my therapy. Like I love feeding people. I love cooking food. I love playing with flavors. And if you're growing food, it's even cooler because then you can like mess around with your own products. So it's like more single source in a way. So that's what gets me off, honestly.
That's awesome. And then experimentation with fermentation. So what kind of other ferments do you work with? Do you do any kind of like drinks or anything like that?
Yeah, I like do kombucha. I do sell like cultures on my website, unclefungus.com. That's UNKLE fungus.com. But yeah, you can get like my SCOBY culture. Right now I'm actually working on, I'm turning a SCOBY culture into like a Jun SCOBY culture. So instead of feeding the SCOBY culture sugar, you can feed it honey, like raw honey. And that's its food source. That's its like energy source. So that's taken a couple months to do, but it's turned out pretty well. So just kind of like messing around and experimenting with things like that. I also do make a lot of hot sauce. So in my garden, I grow a lot of peppers every year.
Yeah, dude.
I ferment them. And I like to do like long extended ferments, like a minimum at least a year. You know, I have some ferments that have been going since 2020. You know, I have like a ramp hot sauce that's like, you know, that I haven't even tried yet. I haven't even like looked at it. I'm just like forgetting about it until I just feel the time is right, you know, to pull it and bottle it.
Dang. So of all the things you do, what excites you the most these days? Because I know you're kind of spread pretty wide as far as like things that you know how to do that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. But I do see that, you know, like even in your name, Uncle Fungus, that like mushrooms is like a cornerstone. How did it go from hobby to what you're doing now? Like, and what's been most like interesting to you in your journey?
Yeah, well, I started out back in 2016, 2017. I got really into mushroom foraging. I didn't really have any insight on like the community or at all. I just like knew I just was bored. Like I needed to do something. So I was like, one day I was just going on a hike, found a ton of chicken in the woods, like growing off this log. I've never seen it before. I just blew my mind. It's like these bright orange, you know, huge fruiting bodies growing off this big log. I didn't know what, like, I was like shaking. I was like, what the hell is this? So yeah, I picked it. I quickly learned that there's like Facebook groups, you know, for wild mushroom identification. I quickly kind of met people from those communities, started talking with them, and just kind of like lurked around the Facebook group, especially the wild mushroom identification. And I just repetition, just like seeing what people are finding and what time of year and in what environments. And then I kind of applied that knowledge into like my environment and just hiking, like I would say 3 or 4 times a week, because I was just so obsessed with find, like, I just, it was like a can of worms, you know. I found something new.
Oh yeah.
And it blew my mind. It was a challenge, you know, learning Latin terminology, figuring out the mushrooms and like how they, you know, cooperate even in the ecosystem and what's, you know, symbiotic relationships they might have. So yeah, I just got into foraging. And you know, it was seasonal for me, because like winters, I mean, you can forage pretty much all year round in PA, but it's very sparse in the wintertime. There are wintertime mushrooms. But yeah, I was just like picking mushrooms. I was literally completely obsessed with it. And I love picking mushrooms so much that I was like, you know, I got to figure out how to just pick them year round. So I was like, you know what? In the wintertime, I'm going to start growing mushrooms and, you know, just playing around with that. You know, around that time when I had that kind of vision, you know, that same summer or that same spring, you know, I was hiking and I found a wild psilocybin mushroom called Psilocybe ovoidiodensis ideata, and I found it and I didn't know what it was, but something was like, you know, it's just like I like looked right at it and just like it was like right there, and I picked it and I was looking at it, I was like, wow, this is a pretty unique mushroom. Didn't know what it was, put it in my bag, you know, and I was like thinking about it. I was like, man, I didn't take another look at that. I picked it up out of my bag. It was like a cluster and it was like blueing, you know, and I'm pretty familiar with, you know, psilocybin mushrooms in general, but like I had no idea that we had wild, like wood-loving, potent psilocybe species that grow naturally in Pennsylvania. Yes. So once that was like a thing, I was like, oh my God, I was like hooked. I was like, I got to find, like, learn more about these and find them. And I just kind of like scoured the whole local area, going to like state game land, going along creeks, private property, you know, someone that I knew. And I found this huge, I would say it was the length of a football field in a riparian zone. It's just like right along like a creek, moving water. And it was like a flood zone. And it was like had a bunch of wood debris and everything around it. And I just like looked and I kept finding it. I was just like everywhere I looked, there was close, like 12, 15, 30, like of them all just around me. And I was like, oh my God. So I started picking them. And of course, like, you know, I got a nice sack of them, took them home. And, you know, just went through, identified them all, made sure I had all the right thing. And I felt very confident. And once everything was like 100%, you know, certified, I guess you call it, you know, I was like, man, this is like the perfect opportunity to somehow make a trade, you know, of goods for services or whatever to acquire my first lab equipment. So, you know, I did that and I got my first flow hood. I built my first flow hood I had like a woodworking construction background, do stove masonry and things like that. And I had a wood shop at the time. So yeah, I had a, you know, turned my garage into a wood shop. That was a hobby before growing mushrooms and honey mushrooms. But yeah, I got my lab set up. You know, first thing I did was I acquired like a spore print. I went to the grocery store. You know, I got all these things. I cloned some oyster mushrooms off the shelf, you know, learned how to do agar, do all that stuff. And yeah, it just took off from there. And I've just been doing it ever since.
Dang. So 2016 to now, you've kind of done a little bit of everything. And now you're, I see like you're growing again, like at the wine caps in the yard. So like you're able to like, have you been able to go out and forage and find certain mushrooms and then kind of like domesticate them and have them growing in your local area? Or have you, you know, what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm actually, I used to do a lot more of that when I was more foraging and just figuring out how to grow and clone and all that stuff. But yeah, I've definitely found like a local lion's mane and cloned that. Like right now I'm working on a culture that I cloned this past fall. It's a lion's mane mushroom, and yeah, I've grown it out before, lost the culture. I was like, I gotta find it. Went to the same tree this past fall, grabbed it, cloned it. So I'm working on expanding that out. Yeah, just those, even the wine cap mushrooms too. You can find them in the wild. I found them before, cloned them. Yeah. I love doing the hyper local, you know, your own genetics. Land-raised genetics are just sometimes superior than like, you know, like the general commercial genetics half the time.
Sure. Dang, man, that's pretty awesome. So what's up with the microgreens? I've tried, I've grown them once, I think. I've gotten like the tray, you know, the substrate for them essentially. It's kind of just water and you let them like, you know, sprout in the dark and then you throw them up into some light. And it was fun, but yeah, is that something else that you offer as well?
Yeah, so I have just like a little mini microgreen kit. You know, it's in like a deli container sort of thing. You know, I offer that on my website. Yeah, they're really fun. You know, you get like 3 seed packs, 3 different types. I mean, you can mix them together, like beet seeds. So you grow beet microgreens, broccoli, and then like a spicy mix. So you get like, you know, like 3 different rounds of microgreens from one kit. And of course, you know, I offer the replacements for the seeds because I want people to reuse the plastic containers as much as they can. So, you know, at least like you can have something that's just like a, you know, a little, if you like growing microgreens or you just want to figure it out like really small scale or just have something to put on a sandwich, you know, that you grew. And especially in the wintertime when like you're not really able to grow a whole lot of vegetables, like sure, depending on where you're at.
So where do you see the mushroom community kind of moving towards, or maybe the industry, and how do you want to be part of that in the next, you know, like 1, 3 and maybe like even 5 years as things develop?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. I've wanted to do a bunch of different things over the years, you know. I've wanted to be like the wild mushroom expert, and then I wanted to be like the cultivator, you know, and now I'm just kind of doing a bunch of different things because that's what I find is like just the most fun, you know what I mean? And sure, doing it seasonally. But the industry itself, I mean, it's just constantly evolving. You know, it's probably the only industry that is just like, you know, you wake up one morning and there's like a brand new discovery. It's like, you know, I'm seeing a lot of industrialization of micro materials happening, which is really awesome. I think that's going to be huge in the next couple of years. Then there's like, you know, cordyceps and all these awesome functional mushrooms that are like changing people's lives. I mean, they change my lives. And then you have, you know, the psychedelic therapy and all that stuff too. That's, you know, not sure if I'm quite keen on where that's really going, but, you know, I am glad that people are, you know, it's not taboo anymore. It's like being kind of like, offered to people that would never even think to use it, and it changes their lives for the better, you know?
Speaking of how mushrooms have changed lives, how have mushrooms changed your life?
You know, it's just who I am now. Like, you know, before that, it was just like black and white. Life was just like black and white, you know, grayscale. And now mushrooms are just, they're the color of my world.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. I mean, like, that's such a good way to put it. I've never really thought of it like that. Yeah. It's like everything kind of was just like normal. Everything almost looked the same. And then the fine colors, edges, sounds, everything, you know, is a little bit more vibrant, things like that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What else do you love to do in your life, man? I'm like, you're a very interesting guy. You're like a jack of all trades. I'm interested to know like what your daily life kind of looks like. And I know it's, if I'm correct, it's kind of like me where it's a little different every day, but you're kind of doing the same things, you know, for the most part. What does like your daily workflow look like?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I don't wake up super early. You know, I'm more of a night owl sort of guy, but, you know, I wake up, yeah. I get woken up by, you know, a stampede of toddlers and kids yeah. screaming and fighting and pinching and biting, every morning. And then, yeah, I start my day, you know, get out of bed around like 7:30, 8 o'clock and then have coffee yeah. and just kind of, I'd package up, you know, packages, get all my morning routines done. And then, the rest of the day I plan it out, you know, it's like you said, it's different every day. You know, I have a lot going on, so I kind of have to structure my weeks and months out, day by day, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, this needs to happen. I'm going to do this today, do that tomorrow sort of deal. And right now I've been really focused on this festival that me and a couple of friends are throwing in Gettysburg. It's called Morel Fest. It's the first Morel Festival that I've ever heard of. I've had this idea for a couple of years now. You know, I was a single dad for a couple of years, but now I'm able to like kind of get back to work, so to speak. And I really want to, we're like spearheading this festival. Yeah, it's going to be really awesome. It's based around just wild foraging in the spring abundance and morel mushrooms ultimately.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm interested in heading out. That's, you know, I'm on like West Coast essentially, and I've never really been out East Coast other than maybe Florida, go to like Disney World, which was like, That's not really experiencing the East Coast, if you ask me. But what is this festival going to look like, or how do you want it to look, and when is this happening?
Well, the goal is to really just make it like the annual festival where people come first thing in the season. You know, the first festival, it celebrates just right around the time of spring abundance. You know, it's in late April. It's April 27th and 28th. It's a Saturday and Sunday. In Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And it's at Conscious Acre Farm in Gettysburg. It's a friend of mine. We're coming together. We're putting this thing together. We're co-creating it. You know, we have tickets for sale right now on, you can find the link on my website, Morel Fest. You can also get, go straight to the source, consciousacrefarm.com, and check out tickets. We have a couple different options. We got, you know, day passes. Children are free as well. So if you bring the kids for a day or whatever, go on like a morel foray. There's gonna be like ramps, you know. My friend Justin, he did a good job of scouting out some of his personal spots and really kind of letting us use that for the festival. Then there's VIP package tickets that are, you know, they're gonna have like a morel dinner, you know, and a brunch too the next day on that Sunday. There's going to be tons of speakers. We're going to have like mycologists, ecologists, doing like walks, workshops, all this stuff. We have some of the best people in their fields coming to kind of help put this thing together and really make it an awesome experience.
That sounds awesome. That's something that I definitely would like to join. Are you guys going to have any press passes or anything like that?
Press passes? I'm sure we can make that happen. Absolutely. We would love to love some coverage. Absolutely.
Dude, I'm like all about it, you know. Definitely, because of my local ecology doesn't support my like inner passion for wanting to go out and forage, whereas like, you know, it's very apparent, it's very abundant and just natural, normal over there. So you guys have like a totally different, you know, ecosystem that I would love to check out for sure. This is a little side note, but I'm interested in so you have three children. I'm interested in how you manage yourself and your business life and your family life. Like, what does that look like? I know it's obviously difficult and different every day as well, but like, what does that look like for you?
It's a lot of juggling different things, keeping balances, not just on two sides, but 360 usually, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's a lot of work. You know, it's sometimes it's day by day. Other times it's hour by hour. You know, you're just really trying to white knuckle your day. Sometimes the kids aren't like cooperating. You got a bunch of work to do. But, you know, my girlfriend is actually my stepdaughter, she's been helping out with the kids. So, like, it's been a huge weight off of me so I can kind of focus on, I mean, you can hear them stomping around upstairs, honestly. But, my three-year-old's going through a Hulk phase right now. So everything's Hulk, and he's, like, got, like, the purple pants, and he's just, like, breaking stuff. But, it's great, though. I mean, You know, it's, I wouldn't want it any other way. It's a lot of work, but it's just so fulfilling. You know, every day is just an adventure.
Love that. I ask, and I've been asking that more and more, just like other young guys who have kids, because it's something, by the time this comes out, my girlfriend won't hear it because she's not home right now either, but we're looking to, you know, have kids here in the future. And I'm always asking just like little side note questions, you know,
just to get
a little bit of, you know, some ground laid for that. That's pretty cool though. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up over there in that area?
Yeah. Lancaster County, born and raised. Yeah.
What was, did you have any, like interest in mushrooms growing up at all? Or were you like me and I wouldn't say I had mycophobia, but like, I definitely just stayed away from them.
Yeah. I kind of always did. Like I remember in middle school, you know, I was at school, you know, it's middle school. And we had a lot of rain one spring or whatever. And like, there was all these mushrooms around. So we had a lot of fun, like kicking them and throwing them at each other, you know, just having mushroom fights. I guess like some of them were massive, you know, I don't even know. I couldn't tell you what they were, but, at this point, but, I mean, I don't know. It's just amazing. I don't know. I guess, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. Sorry, the kids are stomping around up there. I can't concentrate.
Don't worry, man. It's all good. I asked just because, like, you know, to go from like growing up and like me, I had experience where I was in my backyard and it was like an angel had landed in my backyard. I remember seeing this big, huge, beautiful mushroom. I don't even know what it was, to be honest. Yeah. And I stood next to it, like got down and was like just like maybe inches away from grabbing it. And my mom ran outside as if I was about to, you know, touch like a rabid dog or something. Like went inside, like rubbed my hands down. So, you know, like for the longest time I was like not afraid of mushrooms. I was just like, you know, you stay away from those kinds of things, and didn't eat them growing up. And now all of a sudden it's like my life. So it's always good to like, you know backgrounds and things like that. But I'm interested in, as far as like scientific exploration in mycology, what has been like the extent of what you've done and or personal research?
Yeah. So, if you've heard of the spotted lanternfly, I was kind of doing some of my own research on that. There is a fungus called Bavaria bassiana. The spotted lanternfly is an invasive bug. Turns out it's not as terrible as we anticipated it to be. Actually, I think it's done a little bit more good than bad as far as destruction. It's like a really beautiful insect. It's got like red, black, gray spotted wings. You know, they fly, they just hop, they don't bite, they don't sting. They literally hop like grasshoppers with wings. And, they're really pretty, but when they first showed up here about 4 years ago, I think, you couldn't even walk through my backyard because they would hang out in the trees and they would just be like swarms of them. Like it was insane. One year I couldn't walk through my backyard without one landing in my mouth or like, you know, on my clothes, jumping off your forehead and face. It was pretty bad. And then that was probably the most pressure I've seen. But also, they really like their, because they're from Asia. So they really like this this tree called the Tree of Heaven. That's actually an invasive tree here. It's from Asia. So they will go to that because it's their only tree that they know of, you know. And they go to these trees and they kind of penetrate them with their, you know, their little tube mouths. You know what I'm talking about? I forget the word for it. But they'll suck the sap out of it, and it's like really sugary sap. And then their excrement is like, it's called, what's it called? It's like a sugary sort of excrement that kind of like sprays down. Like you can just stand underneath the tree and get rained on by like thousands of these things on one tree. And it just like, you know, it falls on the ground, it ferments and then molds. So there's like a black sooty mold that kind of has a symbiotic relationship with their excrement and like their discharge. And that's probably it looks really nasty. You know what I mean? And like, you know, obviously the surrounding, ground floor, you know, that stuff gets kind of damaged by it, but it's really localized. Anyways, I was hiking and, I was with my kids, my two boys, and I found this spotted lanternfly on a trail. I was just laying there and it was covered in like this white mold. And I like knew exactly what it was. I was like, that's got to be Bavaria bassiana, And this fungus, what it does, it's very, very particular. It's very selective with insects that it attacks and like kind of uses to its advantage. It's just like it's a spore that typically lives in the ground. Insect gets infected by a spore load of it, and then it basically mummifies them. It's like entomopathogenic, so it's got like just like a white mold that kind of eats them from the inside out and kills them. So I found that specimen. I took it to my lab. And just messing around with it. I did some spore swabs and then caught like some other healthy living spotted lantern flies and put them in a jar. You know, I was just like seeing how effective this would be to eradicate this invasive species. In 12 hours, these things were dead. They're just from being exposed to just a little bit of spore, like from a swab, or just put in like a tank or a container with a mummified specimen. 12 hours later, as soon as they make contact with it, I mean, they're just like, they're either dead or just like barely alive. It's so effective. And I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen this like this mold, this fungus, you know, affecting like, you know, beneficial insects, you know, like honeybee or like, you know, native bees and things like that. I haven't seen any of that going on. And it just really like kind of raises the question, like this thing is like an equalizer, you know, it's a fungus, very selective. I mean, we have the cicada blooms, you know, the cicadas that come out like every 17 years or so. I mean, they're so overabundant that, I mean, you will see this fungus on just like a certain percentage of them. Like, you know, it'll infect a certain percentage of them almost to like control the population. It's very interesting. But yeah, I was playing around with that. I'm kind of put that project on hold for a little while, but I'm just starting to get back into it. I sent the cultures out and some swabs to, you know, a couple of mycologists in the community that, you know, that work with entomopathogenic fungi. I was in contact with a scientist. He had already done his write-up and everything by the time I got to him. But yeah, I was doing all my testing and things like that. And he is from Cornell University. And like, he had already, I emailed him. I was like, hey, I got this, you know, specimen, blah, blah, blah. I did all this experiments with it. These are my results. But it was too, a little too late. He already wrote up his whole thesis and his write up on it. But that was pretty fun.
That's amazing. So these trees that they're like, you know, congregating to, you said they're evasive. So I mean, do they help to kind of break down or kill that evasive tree as well?
Oh yeah, yeah. You can look out, you see all the dead tree of heavens. Like anywhere they grow, they'll grow alongside of roads. You know, out in the woods too. I mean, they just destroyed this, like, I would say most of the trees in the area. And over the past couple of years, I've seen the numbers of this insect completely diminish down to like, you only might find like a few. It's like a shockwave, you know, just spraying, like almost like a mycelial shockwave on an agar plate, you know, yeah. Just kind of spreading. So it's kind of heading towards Ohio, Pittsburgh area right now. It's going up like central PA up north towards New York. People are starting to see that shockwave still continuing to, and the thing is though, people like, you know, logging trucks and things like that, cause they hang out on trees or egg sacks. They lay their egg sacks on trees. So, we were in the red zone. We weren't allowed to, here in this area, we were not allowed to like move like logs or timber or anything out of the area without it being like thoroughly inspected. Because you know, that's where they reproduce on these trees. I mean, cut down a bunch of, you know, log trees and you have a bunch of egg sacks on them, you take them up to like New York or even anywhere else, you know, then they hatch and then next thing you know, you have an invasion over there.
Gotcha. Dang, that's pretty awesome, but also kind of scary at the same time. I can't say that there's anything like that going on in my area whatsoever, but
yeah,
I'm interested, from the time you started in like 2016 and, you know, you had mentioned like the Facebook groups and how like important those were. How has your local mycology community changed from that time frame till now? Do you have like a bunch of local guys you can reference or call or hang out with or do kind of this stuff with or what?
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of friends of mine. They're from like, you know, the PA area, Maryland area that I know. Definitely that's how I met like just about everybody. I mean, other than going to like MycoFest. Which is like Will's, you know, Mycosymbiotics Festival in PA. Yep. That's a great place to network. But yeah, that's where I originally got introduced to like my friend Thomas Patterson. He's been doing this stuff for like over 10 years. He's got like, he forages professionally. This is what he does. Like, he'll travel all over and just like look at weather patterns and just like look at satellite images of trees. And like he was showing me one time, he just like pulled up his phone, he's just like going into like this patch of like white blossoming trees. It was a photo in the spring. He's like, those are all apple blossoms there, so I'm gonna go check out this spot come this time of year looking for this certain mushroom. And that kind of like that blew me away a little bit. Like, this is like serious stuff. So yeah, I kind of got introduced to like the foraging community, and then of course, you know, everything else followed.
That's awesome. What kind of things are you looking forward to in 2024, or like projects, events, things like that? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, besides Morel Fest, I do host like a small little, you know, like little shindig at my place every fall called Uncle Fungus Fest. And it's just like around, you know, the winter salt or the, you know, the it's in September. And, you know, we're celebrating like fall abundance, go out and foray, pick maitake and things like that as far as events go. But otherwise, you know, I just kind of float around and you know, just whatever. I love going to music festivals too. That's just something I do in my pastime. Sure. Love live music. It's like my religion, so to speak. Like that's my church, is going to go see live music. So I do a lot of that, but, yeah. And then there's Myco Fest too. You know, I always hit that festival. If you haven't been, it's really awesome. So there's that too.
Yeah, I just became aware of it maybe like last year, and then I was just talking to Philly Golden Teacher, and he said I should make my way out there. That's pretty cool. And I'm like, I probably should, man. It's like I said, it's just that culture that I haven't really gotten to connect with. Or, you know, what's crazy is I actually grew up in Seattle, Washington, and that's like another mecca for mushrooms. You know, didn't know until I left, of course, kind of thing. But I haven't like quite been able to forage. I mean, actually, I just got invited. I'm upset I can't remember this dude's name, but there's actually a local mushroom guy in Tucson. So he's maybe like two and a half hours away from me. And he just invited me to go and hunt for morels up there. I'm like, I didn't know morels grew in Tucson, Arizona. I thought it was way too hot. So apparently there's some patches over there. So that's like the closest I can get to like foraging for the most part. So I'm really excited about that. And yeah, I'd love to come to any festival that you throw, obviously, too. But
yeah, man, I'd love to have you.
Dude, it'd be cool. I mean, again, like I haven't really experienced East Coast. I don't even have family out there. Like everyone's West Coast for the most part. So I'd love to get out there. I'm interested in, obviously, like you're doing all these really cool things, and you have a great following. And I want to give people kind of like an understanding of like the mindset that you have that's behind all of the inspiration you have. Like what creates and causes that kind of thing. So if you had like maybe two or three things that you carry with you, it could be quotes, memories, or how do you say, just like belief systems that you carry with you that help to inspire you or keep you going. What are some of those things?
Oh, that's a good one. Very intricate questions. Really don't know where to start with the answer to that. Things I carry with me. Well, I'll just give an example of like today. You know, just looking through, it's just like, you know, it's been such a long road as far as me, my business, and everything like that, and my personal growth as a person. You know, it's just been, you know, a roller coaster, so to speak. But it's, you know, it's a great ride. But you know, it's like fast growth builds ego, slow growth builds, you know, community and like things like that. And it's just like, I compare that to like, you know, the oak tree, the mighty oak tree. I mean, it's a keystone species in its environment. But it takes a long time for it to establish itself into that situation. So, I'm really happy with like the slow, steady growth, you know, as a person and just like my business and, you know, my family and all that.
That's pretty awesome. I like that. Fast growth. What do you say? Fuels ego or creates ego?
Yeah, builds ego. Slow growth. You know, it builds, you know, success, community, that sort of thing.
That is amazing. I love that. Do you have any tips, tricks, golden nuggets that you can give to maybe the new grower who is maybe either in a similar situation to you or just a new mushroom enthusiasts in general?
I don't know, just pursue whatever fascinates you. You know, there's the 100-hour rule. You know, if you spend 100 hours doing something, you're going to be better than 90% of the population. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. So, like, you know, if you just spend 100 hours just focusing on foraging mushrooms, spend 100 hours looking for wild mushroom spots and picking them, I mean, you know, those are the things that, you know, will last a lifetime, and you will be, you know, I would say you'd be, you know, better off, more set than like 90% of the population who doesn't put in the time, the work, and dedication to what you want to accomplish.
Love that. And it's so true. Yeah. Like, just pursue. I like the way you put that. Just pursue it. Like, you're not going to get any worse or any better not doing it. So you might as well just keep going. Right.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Love that. Drew, I have some lasting questions for you. I ask everybody this question that I interview on the show. It's an interpret as you may question. You can answer it long form, short form, however you need to. And that is Drew Zimmerman of Uncle Fungus. In what ways every day are you growing in mind, body, spirit, and mushroom?
Man, you got the deep philosophical stuff, because I just want to go hard on it. How do I grow every day? I mean, personally, I have a lot of things to watch grow. You know, I got my kids that I like to watch grow up. You know, I have a lot of even like agar plates, I got fruiting blocks, all these things. I just love growing in general. You know, and all of the ups and downs that come with that, all the failures, you know, failure is extremely important to me. That's how I learn. That's how I've always learned. You can tell me something till you're blue in the face, and I won't take your advice until I see for myself, you know, and that's how I've applied a lot of things in my life have gone that way. And, you know, it's what makes you, you know what I mean? Builds you to who you are.
Love that. This is kind of like an off the cuff question. What's your favorite flavor of kombucha to make?
Kombucha. Oh, man, I've really been into like just ginger and white grape. Keep it simple. White grapes. It almost has like a sweet, like white wine sort of, you know, flavor profile. But yeah. I really like using grapes in my kombucha. I really feel like that's my go-to. That was some ginger.
And the ginger, almost like a jun kind of, or a, what do you call it? Like a, wow. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's just a little side question. I've been recently on the blueberry or strawberry mint kick. I like those two. Just had to ask because I know you're into kombucha too.
You should try strawberry mint. That would be really good.
That's the jam right there. Exactly, yeah. And lastly, Drew, how can everybody going forward get a hold of you, and how can they best get in contact with you, and how can they, or where can they find you? How can they best get in contact with you, and what's the best way they can support you going forward?
Yeah. Awesome. You can follow me on Instagram. It's Uncle Fungus. That's UNKLE_Fungus. I'm probably most active on that account. I'm not really on Facebook anymore. You know, you can go to my website, www.unclefungus.com. You know, I sell a lot of products. I have all my product listings and events and things like that on there. You know, you can also email me at unclefungusllc@gmail. So, you know, I do a lot of emailing and stuff like that. So you can get a hold of me, you can ask me questions. You know, and I get a lot of, especially when mushroom season starts, I get a lot of like ID questions. You know, I like helping people out, you know, giving them like proper IDs of, you know, people are just starting out foraging and things like that. If you're like local on the East Coast, I'm really familiar with the mushrooms that grow. So I get a lot of pictures and stuff sent to me through Instagram, and I love answering those, you know, those requests and things like that. So yeah, you can get a hold of me on there. And like I said, Morel Fest, this April 27th, 28th. We have, you know, through the month of March, we have a really good deal going. Buy one ticket, get the other 50% off. So that's just through the month of March. So if you're doing like a tier one, that's what we're doing.
Amazing, man. Thank you so much for taking some time, energy, and space out of your day to come share you and your story and your business with everybody. I really enjoyed getting to know you, and I look forward to getting to know you more in the future. We'd love to have you back on the show, of course, and hopefully make my way out to some of these events going forward. Drew, do you have any lasting words of wisdom or advice or anything else that you'd like to say?
Man, just pursue your dreams, whatever infatuates you in life, you know, as long as it's a healthy decision, I would say just follow that and pursue that and, you know, just put your time in. It'll pay off.
Love it. And I totally agree. All right, guys, if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to give it a like wherever you're listening or watching. Don't forget to comment down below with any comments, questions that you might have for Drew of Uncle Fungus. Don't forget to give him a follow on Instagram as well. And don't forget to subscribe. And until next time, Drew, namaste. Have a great day. Don't contemplate. Meditate. And we'll see you guys on the next one. Thanks, Drew. Talk to you later.
Thanks.
All right. Bye, guys.